I did a little bit of research because I wondered what the balm in Gilead meant in terms of our Christian journey. And Gilead was the place in biblical times where a lot of the ancient medicines and balms were made for wounds and for healing. And so this hymn writer adopted that image as one for our Christian journey, that there is a place where we can go to receive healing and to find something to comfort us. So I found that interesting, so share that with you. Well, there was a little confusion this morning around my title for the sermon because Bob and Renata didn't know what a treed cat was. So I thought I better clarify that first. Do you know what a treed cat is? That's a cat that's somehow gotten out and frightened and has gone up a tree and too high usually for anybody to reach, and getting a cat out of a tree is obviously a difficult problem. Used to be the fire department used to, as part of their services, come bring their ladders and get the cats out of the tree, but then of course with liability. So that's what a treed cat is, in case you're confused. And hopefully this will start to make a little bit more sense in the context of Zacchaeus too. Well, welcome to All Saints Sunday. So all of you saints of God, raise your hand. What? None of you? Nobody's willing to say they're a saint? When Tom walked in this morning, he said, should I call you Miss Mo? Reverend Mo? I said, no, it's Saint Sunday. I want to be Saint Mo for the day. Well, as I kind of predicted, most of us are pretty uncomfortable with calling ourselves saints, myself included. And it's tough, you know, because it's a word that has had a lot of negative connotations over the years. Not one that makes us feel that we're relating to people in sort of a relational way if we consider ourselves saints. In fact, most people would shy away from that. Well, Billy Graham, who is probably one of the modern-day saints, tells of a time during the early years of his preaching ministry when he was due to lead a crusade meeting in a town in South Carolina. Excuse me. And he needed to mail a letter. And he asked the little boy in the main street how he could get to the post office. And after the boy had given him directions, Billy said, if you come to the Central Baptist Church tonight, I'll tell you how to get to heaven. And the boy replied, no thanks, you don't even know how to get to the post office. Well, this morning's story was a story about a man who would never have been named as a saint within his circles. Most other characters in the Bible are introduced by their lineage or connection to the community or family. And I would just, if you go back to Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus names his disciples, or when the writer names Jesus his disciples, it says, when Jesus summoned his 12 apostles, first Simon, known as Peter, so giving the connection from his name to his nickname, and his brother Andrew, so Simon and Simon slash Peter was his brother to Andrew, James was the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas, the one who betrayed him. But did you notice the tax collector there didn't get his community connection either? And neither did Zacchaeus in the writing. So he's so disconnected from the community that he is introduced by his job description. And that doesn't seem strange in our culture, because very often we introduce people by their profession, you know, or that's the first question out of our mouths, you know, hi, my name is Mo, what do you do? And on airplanes I always say, I work at McDonald's. So don't get their whole life story. I'm just kidding. But in the first century Middle East culture, Who you are in relationship to the community was normally the first description. And Zacchaeus was not afforded that simple norm that suggested he was respected and honored within the community. He was a tax collector, and as such, he was despised. Not only that, he is one of the few persons in the Bible that we have a physical description for. He was short. And I can appreciate that, because usually there's big things underneath my feet here so everybody can see me. And when something physical is included in your identity, you know that the norm, that is the source of bullying and often a source of anxiety. Think about that growing up, when people named you Four Eyes, or Shorty Shorty, or Fatty Fatty 2x4, or Stormin Norman. When your name is associated with something about you, it's usually quite negative. And when a person's name with their attributes, it's usually meant to further disrespect that person. Now, we all hate Revenue Canada, probably, but it's not the same thing. If there's any Revenue Canada people here, I apologize. We love you in this community. We all have our reasons for being discontent with government spending. Hardly a day goes by without a report of exorbitant fees, inappropriate expenses, wondering why they would spend that kind of money on something. But realistically, when you leave here today, the traffic lights will probably be working, the parks will largely be maintained, transit systems will be operating, medical care will be available, some social justice if you get into trouble, reasonably functional education system, and there are justice systems there. We do see some of our tax dollars hard at work for all of our complaints, but not so for the people in Jesus' day. When Jesus was looking at that coin and they were trying to trick him into giving a false answer, when Jesus said, "Give to Rome what belongs to Rome and to God what belongs to God," that wasn't the right answer for his Jewish audience, because they were tired of paying taxes. They were living with the Roman government bleeding them dry, and Zacchaeus was an agent of that government. Zacchaeus was a traitor to his people. He was Jewish, but working for the Roman government. And Israel is an arid land, and the food production at that time barely kept them above the brink of starvation. And our tax system, while not popular, is somewhat reasonably predictable. If you earn the same amount every year, you roughly pay the same amount. But tax collectors were notoriously unscrupulous. They took more and more and took a cut for themselves. Paying taxes to Rome meant you were going hungry. You were without medicine and without food, and limited return on your payment as you watched Rome engage in beautiful projects that we still enjoy seeing today, but that were paid for on the backs of the people that they had, that they ruled. So when Jesus came to town and there was a crowd, like a scared cat, Zacchaeus was treated. Not just above the crowd because he couldn't see, but when everyone in town doesn't like you and you are small, you don't want to be close to that many elbows. Oops, I'm sorry. Oh, did I step on your foot? Oh, so sorry. You know, it's just reasonable. But he wanted to see Jesus. Whatever he had heard, whatever he saw, he believed that Jesus was a person worth seeing. He set aside his own status and importance in life, and he risked getting mixed up with the crowd, risked the wrath of the people, and I'm sure it's not very dignified for a grown man to climb a tree. But there he was. You see, Zacchaeus was no saint among his people. He was an extortionist and essentially a robber. His wealth came on the back of his fellow countrymen and his fellow synagogue goers. So when he ran ahead of that crowd and climbed into a tree, he must have been shocked when the throng, as it moved through Jericho, stopped, and Jesus looked up. Did you notice that Jesus called him by name? He didn't look up and go, "Hey, who's the short guy in the tree?" Didn't ignore him, but looked directly at him. "Zacchaeus, come down." I always have that Sunday school line in my head, "For I'm going to your house for tea." There's actually no mention of tea in the Bible. But he invited himself to Jesus. And notice that direction of the conversation. Jesus invites himself over to Zacchaeus' house, and then Zacchaeus talks about the changes he was going to make in his life, giving half of what he had to the poor and repaying anyone whom he had cheated. Notice Jesus didn't ask for that. Jesus didn't say, "Hey, how about cleaning up your life and taking some of the money in your pockets and giving it back to some of these people in the crowd that you've already cheated, and then I'll come over." The invitation went out. And perhaps he heard the grumbling crowd. I'm sure he heard the grumbling crowd. And somewhere in between that invitation and the grumbling crowd, Zacchaeus saw the errors of his ways and sought to change them. Jesus' invitation was not contingent upon change, but was inspirational for the change. Somehow many of us have become treed saints, I think. We're equally afraid to deal with people, and we're up in the trees, and we're watching from a distance, and we're hoping we kind of have a closer, deeper relationship with God, and we're running ahead and jumping into the tree, hoping we'll see something. We're being invited from that new viewpoint, a place where we can see things just a little better, to a new start. Zacchaeus was living in the city of Jericho that was known for being the central place for those that did tax collecting. But even there, he was not living among people and not part of that community. There was an interesting social project going on in a number of big cities, including Toronto, and it's called Housing First. And the premise of that is that we don't expect people to sober up or get their degrees or finish their high school credits or get a job or fix their mental health issues. We give them housing first, regardless of how badly they smell or how crazy their ways may seem. And after they get housing, then they are offered, at their own free will, a whole variety of social services to apply for income that they might be available to them if they're not living. If they have a mailing address to where they can send it to, they're offered services to get banks going, mental health services, once they have the housing first. And of the 2,149 people in the study, 73% of them spent the vast majority of their day in their new housing and not on the streets. That resulted in 732 fewer visits to the emergency department, 460 fewer police arrests, 1,260 less outpatient visits, and a whole host of them had gotten jobs, found income, had gone on their meds, just a whole variety of change. And the cost for the shelter beds for a month was $1,932, $4,300 a month for all the jail days, $10,900 to keep them in hospital for that month, but only $701 to subsidize their rent. You see, we need to give people their dignity first. We need to be people that doesn't grumble and ask for change and ask them to be different and ask them to somehow meet our expectations of who they should be, but just invite them into a new life. You see, Jesus was living out that social experiment way back in his time. When we are compassionate instead of judgmental, inviting instead of jeering, accepting before we ask them to change, miracles can happen. And for that crowd, for a tax collector to say, I'll give you back four times what I owe you, plus give half of all of my wealth to the poor, they would have been standing there, I'm sure, quite dumbfounded. Not only are a lot of saints in the trees, like the people who grumbled at Jesus' invitation, we can grumble at those who don't seem quite perfect enough for us. And that's when we can seem mean and exclusive. See, technically, the crowd was following Jesus all the way through the streets of Jerusalem. But they weren't seeing his message of inclusion, of literally touching the sick, of having compassion on the suffering, feeding the hungry, lifting the paralyzed, and a radical new way of thinking of God's love in our lives and the lives of those around us. Jesus plucked his disciples from the most unlikely of places, from the most unusual professions, and from the strangest personality quirks. If you're an educated teacher, you don't pick fishermen to follow you around. You don't pick people that are going to betray you to the cross. You don't pick brothers to go together because they're going to fight. You don't pick people who are poor. You pick people who can finance your project. So if you've ever been treed, let me invite you to come down as well. For all those who didn't put up your hands and say, I'm a saint, you're treed. Because you aren't claiming your own heritage in Christ Jesus. Nobody was worse than Zacchaeus. Nobody was worse than Judas. Nobody was worse than the murderer Paul. And yet all of them are saints. Maybe you've been treated like Elijah was in the Old Testament, who laid under a broom tree from exhaustion until the Lord, he had enough, just let him die. Perhaps like Zacchaeus, you've been treated because of fear, or you don't feel valued in your community, and it's easier to be in the tree than on the ground. Perhaps like so many saints in the Bible, you just need a quiet place of shade and rest. But remember, though, that Jesus died on the tree so that you are invited as sons and daughters to a radical invitation of fellowship with Jesus. Imagine Jesus showing up here and saying, I'm taking you home, or I'm going to your home today. Jesus made you a son and daughter of Abraham. He was no longer a tax collector at that moment. He wasn't the short son of Abraham, he was the son of Abraham. He was the son who got to have the Savior come to his home, enter his life, and change it profoundly. I think we have to remember that if we're truly meeting Jesus, that transformation is what happens. That's how we truly know we have encountered Jesus. There is an incredible light of illumination that helps us to see our shortcomings in a way that allows us to change them. Notice that Zacchaeus didn't just make restitution, but also offered to give away half of his wealth on top of his restitution. In fact, his offering came first. I will give half of what I have to the poor. And then his restitution. And think about that for a moment. Your first reaction to a real encounter with someone that was important and valued and wanted and famous wouldn't be, oh, I got to go home and do the dishes. It would be, oh, you want to go to my house? Oh, I better go home and do the dishes. Jesus is here. Jesus invites you to come down. Jesus invites you into a relationship that you have never, that is so inspirational. You will just want to change in the way that God is calling you to change. So if you are up in that tree looking for Jesus, remember to listen also for for the invitation that Jesus is coming to your house today. Amen. Leighton Farrell was a minister of Highland Park Church in Dallas for many years. He tells of a man in the church who once made a covenant with a former pastor to tithe 10% of their income every year. They were both young and neither of them had much money. But things changed. The layman tithed $1,000 the year he earned $10,000, $10,000 the year he earned $100,000, and $100,000 the year he earned $1 million. But the year he earned $6 million, he just could not bring himself to write out that check for $600,000 to the church. He telephoned the minister, long since having been moved to another church, and asked to see him. Walking into the pastor's office, the man begged to be let out of the covenant, saying, "This tithing business has to stop. It was fine when my tithe was $1,000, but I just cannot afford $600,000. You've got to do something, Reverend." The pastor knelt on the floor and prayed silently for a long time. Eventually the man said, "What are you doing? Are you praying that God will let me out of the covenant to tithe?" "No," said the minister. "I'm praying for God to reduce your income back to the level where $1,000 will be your tithe." We give out of the goodness and out of God's blessing and generosity to us. I call upon the ushers to take up this morning's offerings.